Hi everybody, how's everybody doing today? It's kind of bright up here. I wasn't expecting it to be so bright. I'm Matt, for those of you that don't know me. I just want to tell you guys a little bit of my history here at Everyday Church. So basically back in 2009, actually, before this church was even started, I was in school at Ozark Christian College. It's a small Christian school in southwestern Missouri. I'm originally from St. Louis, Missouri, and I was taking some church planning classes there, and I really just got interested in church planning. And through a professor of mine, I was introduced to Chris Travis, who started this church, who's the lead pastor of this church. And I got in touch with Chris, and he just started sharing with me about his vision for a church and a church plant. And he pretty, you know, much off the bat just started mentoring me and talking with me. And soon after that, I met Larry and Wendy Bennett. And they were awesome, and I was just like, man, these are really cool people. I would really love to just have the chance to go and spend some time up there and learn from these people. So thankfully, it worked out for me to move up to New York in 2010, and I originally just moved up here and just started working nearby in the neighborhood. And I got here right before we ever had our first gathering as a group. So basically, this was back fall 2010. There was just like a group of a dozen or so of us that met in Larry and Wendy's apartment. It was before we ever had any type of worship service or anything like this. And then in 2011, I started a leadership residency program with Everyday Church, which is basically a fancy way of just saying internship. So it was like a two-year internship type thing that I did. I started reaching out to youth in the area through some different soccer coaching and things that I do, and ended up starting a youth group. And then turned into like a part-time youth ministry position. So I did that from basically January 2011 until the end of 2014. So anybody that was here throughout that time has seen me, knows me, and that type of thing. But I know there's some people that have come to the church in the last year or so, and you're like, who is this guy? Why is he speaking? I've never seen him before. So to explain that part of the story, towards the end of 2014, my wife Kayla and I, who unfortunately couldn't be here today, she had to go fly back to her parents' church in Oklahoma. But her and I were praying about and thinking about our future and our lives, and we're kind of asking God if this is where we felt that He wanted us to be, if He really wanted us to you know, plant our roots here in this community. And we felt like that it was, that He was saying, yes, that is what I want you to do. I've opened doors for you guys. We were both involved in just in the community through different coaching opportunities that we had. And we kept running up against attention, though, which was a communication barrier. We didn't have the ability to really talk and communicate with a lot of the parents of the kids that we were reaching out to. So we decided, you know, if this is where we're going to stay and this is where we're going to plant roots. You guys can hear me, right? It's all good? Okay. Larry said if I move around too much, you might not be able to hear it too good. But if you can't hear me, just be like, Matt, hold the mic close or something. But anyway, so yeah, we just didn't have the ability to communicate with a lot of the parents of the kids and with even some of the kids that we were coaching and working with. So we decided, you know what, if this is where we're gonna be for the long haul, then we're gonna take some time and we're gonna learn Spanish. So for the year 2015, we moved down to Honduras, where we spent about most of the year down there studying Spanish in a language school, and we also were volunteering in a local elementary school. And then towards the end of the year, we went over to La República Dominicana and spent a couple months there in Santo Domingo. Just we were volunteering with the church, living in the community, fully immersed in the Spanish language just to learn Spanish. Entonces ahora nosotros hablamos español, gracias a Dios. So I would say more or less the year was successful. We still got to get better. We have to improve. So anybody speaks Spanish, just don't even speak with me in English because I need to practice. But yeah, so that is basically my wife and I's story, our last year or so, and how we got involved in Everyday Church. So the topic that the staff asked me to speak on today was taking risk, which I don't know if that was intentionally chosen for me or if it just like, you know, felt that they needed somebody for this date or whatever. But those of you that know me, those of you that know me or know my history know. Especially when I was younger, I would take a lot of risks and sometimes do some kind of dumb things. So I'm going to tell you one of those stories. I was in 11th grade English class, and it was like towards the end of the school year, so we were just kind of sitting around preparing for finals. somewhat preparing for finals, just kind of talking. And I was sitting, you know, my desk, it overlooked a window into like this courtyard area, and we were on the second floor. And I was sitting there, and I was looking out the window, and I thought to myself, you know, if I jumped out of this window, I could definitely land it. This really isn't that high. So then I said to my friend next to me, I'm like, dude, I could totally land this if I jumped out of this window. And my friend was like, Matt, you're crazy. You break your legs. Like, this is too high up. You couldn't do that. Just quit thinking about it. And that, you know, that's the type of thing that if you know me well, that gets me going. I'm like, dude, are you kidding me? You really don't think I could do this? Like, I could totally do this. And I even told him, I said, I'm not scared one bit to jump out of the window. The only thing I'm scared of is a teacher catching me. So I told him that, you know, we're going back and forth for a few minutes. And I start thinking to myself, if I could figure out a way to get away with this and the teacher can't see it, I would definitely do it. So now I'm like legitimately considering my options. How could I do this? I had to prove this guy wrong. Oh, and in the meantime, he also told me he'd give me $5 if I would do it, which $5 is like $5, but when you're broke teenager, $5 is like $1,000. I'm like, $5? So there was like this whole, now a whole half of the classroom is kind of talking about it. And I tell these girls, I'm like, hey, would you guys go up to the front of the room and like stand in front of the teacher's desk so she can't see me? They're like, of course. So the teacher was like right in front, but she was sitting down, you know, so she was like low to the ground. So I'm like, go up there and distract her. So these like four or five, you know, I picked like the tallest girls in class. I'm like, go up there. They go up and they all come stand around their desk and they're like, hey, teacher, you know, what's on the test? You know, asking her questions, whatever. As soon as they get up there, I stand up and like the window was like right here. It was one of those windows that like opens up like this, like it sits at this angle, and it's like this high too. I had to climb on the air vent, step over, like duck under, and I was out of the window so quick, I was gone. But I landed right on both feet, fine. I didn't appear to have been caught by the teacher. I didn't think I was. I didn't hear any commotion as I was leaping out the window, but I landed, and I just took off running through this like courtyard. There's a side entrance back into the school. I go back in the school, and I'm just like, now where do I go? I couldn't go back to my classroom because she would, you know, if I walk in the classroom, that would give it away. So I go find this other classroom. By the way, to any teachers that are here, I'm sorry. Like, I really was the kid that you hated, probably. I go into some other classroom. And just walk in there, and I borrow a cell phone from one of the girls in the class, and I call up to my classroom upstairs to see did I get away with it. And one of the kids answers the phone, and all you could hear was just pandemonium, like screaming, laughter. Everybody's like, oh my God! And I was just like, this is not a good thing. I did not get away with this at all. So, yeah, then basically what happens next, I ended up getting suspended from school for the last few days of the year. I had to come up during my summer vacation and take my finals, which stunk. So any youth that's here, do not follow my example. This is one of those stories that I'm making fun of myself because it was a dumb decision. But, yeah, so that was a little bit about, you know, how I was as a kid. I think I tended to, you know, it probably wasn't coming from a healthy place. I liked to be the center of attention and you know, put myself on the line and prove people wrong, that type of thing. I think, thankfully, I've kind of channeled some of that energy into more productive avenues, I think. I don't know. You guys can tell me, I guess. But so today we're going to talk about somebody else who took a risk. And this story can be found in Matthew chapter 14, verses 22 to 29, if you want to follow along. We're going to talk about the time when Peter took a risk and walked on water. And what we're going to find from this story is that that God used Peter to do something incredible, and God wants to use us to do something incredible. So I'm just going to set the scene for the story. Basically, Jesus had just finished performing the miracle of feeding the 5,000. So he just multiplied a few bread and fish and fed, you know, this massive crowd of people. So Jesus is there in his disciples and this massive crowd of people right on the edge of the Sea of Galilee, which is a little bit more like a lake even than a sea. And they're all there, and it's after dinner time. They had already eaten. The miracle had pretty much just happened. And it's evening time, and Jesus tells his disciples, hey, you guys, go get in our boat and go on ahead to the other side of the lake. So the disciples say, okay. They get in the boat and they leave. They head on to the other side of the lake without Jesus. Jesus is there with the crowd and he dismisses the crowd. He tells everybody, you know, go back to, I don't know, wherever you came from. Dismisses, you know, these thousands of people. And then Jesus goes up onto the mountainside and has sort of a prayer time with God. So Jesus, while Jesus is out, you know, having this quiet time, this nice prayer time with God, his disciples, meanwhile, get caught in a storm in the middle of the Sea of Galilee. They're caught in the middle of this storm that's bringing high winds and heavy waves, and they spend most of the night fighting the storm, trying to get to the other side of the lake, but they're unable to. They stay fighting the storm all night, and by the time it's getting close to morning, they've been up all night, you know, hungry, delirious, tired, exhausted, fighting for survival, more or less. They see what appears to be a person, or the shape of a person, out in the lake. And they say to one another, look, there's a ghost. And they're terrified of what they see. They're all very afraid of this ghost that they see out in the middle of the lake with them. And then the ghost proceeds to speak to them. And the ghost calls out and says, take courage. It is I. Do not be afraid. And then Peter, who's one of the disciples in the boat, decides to test this ghost to see if it really is I, Jesus, or if it's a ghost. And he says, if that's you, call me to come out to you onto the water. And then Jesus responds and says, come. And then Peter works up his courage and takes a step out of the boat onto the water and begins to walk on the water towards Jesus. If you guys have read the story before or have heard it preached on, you know what happens next. Peter takes his eyes off of Jesus and recognizes the storm around him and begins to sink into the water. That's not what we're going to talk about today. That's an important illustration on doubt. But today we're just going to talk about the fact that Peter did something incredible. He took a great risk and he got out of the boat and he walked on water. So the first thing that I noticed when reading this story, the first thing that sticks out to me and I find interesting is that Jesus sent his disciples into a storm. So we can read about this in verse 22. It says, immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side. Now, I don't know if Jesus intentionally sent them into a storm, if he knew the weather that was coming, and he wanted to teach them a lesson and said, you know, go and had this whole story all planned out ahead of time. Or I don't know if he wasn't thinking about it at all. He just needed some quiet time with God, and he said, go on ahead. But what I do know is that he told them to go, and they were faithful, they were obedient, they listened to God, and they went, and they found themselves in a storm. It's interesting to me because there's a lot of people, there's a lot of Christians, especially in America, that believe what I would consider a false theology, a health and wealth type theology. That is, if I'm obedient to God, if I'm faithful to God, and I give to God, I give him my money and my time, then God is going to, in return, bless me. He's going to give back to me. And that is not what we see in this story, and it's not what we see in the Bible or in the gospel. It's actually quite the opposite. The way that the gospel is that Jesus came down to earth, right, when we didn't deserve it, when what we really did deserve was death. We deserved nothing. And he lived among us and he died for us so that we may have life. And it's out of the gratitude that we have for what he has already done for us. It's out of the love that we have for him, you know, in the grace that he's given us, that then we are obedient and faithful to him, right? So then sometimes, yeah, we may end up being blessed. We may follow him and be obedient to him, and we may experience material blessings on earth, but there may be other times where we don't. There may be times where we find ourselves in the middle of a storm. This story is a good example of that, but even if you look at the lives of the men that were in the boat, and you follow the narrative of how did their life play out after this moment, right? They continued to follow Jesus and to walk in and preach the name of Christ after Jesus left, after he ascended into heaven. And they all were martyred. They were all martyred for their faith. You know, in the first century, Christianity was a dangerous religion to be a part of. Christianity was synonymous with suffering in that era. And if you were to obey Christ, you were to put your entire life on the line. So I just find it very interesting that God sent his disciples into a storm. And I'm not saying that means that, you know, that we all need to be martyred for our faith. I'm not saying that, well, if we're not, you know, if we don't die, if we don't find ourselves in a storm, then we're not really being obedient. But what I am saying is that the material blessings that we have, right, the things that we have on this earth, those aren't, those don't demonstrate how much faith we have. If we're healthy, it's not because we have more faith than someone else. If we're sick, it's not because we have less faith than someone else. Okay, because of sin, there is disease and there are problems in the world. But regardless of all that, it's because of what Jesus has already done for us that we walk in obedience and faithfulness to him. The next thing that I see is in verse 26. It says, when the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. It's a ghost, they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid. I feel like that is something that I can relate to, and that, you know, all of us can relate to. All of us find ourselves in storms at different points in our lives, whether that's right now we're in a storm, or, you know, we've been in storms in the past. And I think that's a place that tends to be lonely a lot of times. And we feel like no one really knows what we're going through. And we're very isolated. And I think what we see here is that Jesus is saying, and what Jesus is saying to the disciples is that, I'm right here with you. I'm right here next to you. I know what you're going through. I see the fear that you have. I see the pain that you're experiencing. I understand and I relate. Okay, and I love you, and I can give you that courage to overcome, right? I'm right here next to you. And I think that's something that we all need to hear and know is that Jesus is right there with us in the midst of our storm, whatever our storm might be. In verse 28, it says, Peter says, Lord, if that's you, tell me to come to you on the water. And then Jesus said, come. Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came towards Jesus. Now, this is the most important part of the story to me. The whole, it kind of sums up just this whole topic of risk, of taking risk. Peter was in this boat in the middle of this storm. And to stay in that boat was a smart thing to do, right? There's a storm. There's wind and waves and you know, chaos happening all around. It just was common sense. It was, you know, basic survival, right, to stay in the boat and to avoid, you know, any possible danger, any possible threat to, you know, his own livelihood. But Peter was listening for Jesus' voice. And he heard Jesus' voice. He knew Jesus was there, and he believed that Jesus was there with him, right? And because of that belief that he had, that Jesus was right there, that Jesus was who he said he was, and could do this miracle, and could walk on this water, that he also could give Peter the strength to walk on water as well, he took a risk, he took that step of faith, and he got out of the boat. So my question to all of you today is, what boat are you in? What boat are you in that is holding you back from taking a step, from taking a risk, and doing something potentially incredible? I don't know what it is for you, but I was talking about this passage with the Everyday Youth Group. Shout out to them. A few weeks ago, we were just kind of beating it up, and I just wanted to hear their thoughts on it. And some of the stuff that they shared with me were things like other people's expectations. Other people's expectations were holding them back from taking steps of faith and doing something that wouldn't make sense to those who have a certain expectation of them. That might be something that we find ourselves in with, you know, with our family dynamic, with what our parents have passed down to us, that they've expected us to live a certain way, to do a certain thing, to have a certain level of success that is defined in a worldly sense rather than in a biblical sense. Another thing that they talked about was fear of failure, afraid to fail. Peter could have been afraid that he would sink, that he would drown, right? But with faith, he overcame that fear and he walked on the water. So I don't know if that's something that you might struggle with, but God can give you the strength to overcome that fear of failure. And another one is what other people might think, right? That's one that I think we all struggle with, that can keep us from really taking steps and branching out and getting out of our comfort zones and doing things that can make a difference sometimes in the world. Because we don't know, you know, how is someone going to think about me if I do this thing that doesn't make sense in their minds for why I would do it, right? But we have to redefine, you know, we have to redefine our whole belief system and why we do what we do. Because if we are doing things that is defined by how the world thinks of it, right, then we're going to miss the opportunity to do incredible things. We have to redefine, you know, our value system that determine our belief system about why we make the choices and the decisions that we make, so that we leave room for steps of faith and so that God can do incredible things through us. I'm going to tell you guys a story about a hero of mine whose name is John Perkins. John was an African-American man that was born in rural Mississippi in 1930. And John's mother died when he was an infant of starvation, actually. And his dad left him and his three siblings very early on. And John went to live with his three siblings. The four of them went to go live with their grandma, who was raising 19 children. So John grew up, needless to say, not really feeling a lot of love in his home because he was just one of 19 kids. And when John was a teenager, his older brother was actually murdered by a white police officer in a racial incident. And fearing for his life, at the urging of his family, John fled Mississippi. And he left and he moved to Southern California when he was only 17 years old. John moved out there and met a woman and got married, and it was actually an incredible success story. John started a family. He got a good job working in a factory, and he saved up enough money to buy his own home. And when John was about 30 years old, he heard the message of Christ for the first time. And John was just overwhelmed by the love of Christ. He was overwhelmed that there would be someone that loves him so much that he would come here and die for him, especially after a childhood and a life where he never really felt much love. John just started to dive into the scriptures, dive into the word, and was reading and reading and praying and praying, and he was being discipled and taught by leaders around him. And through all those avenues, he started to hear the Lord's voice calling him to come. And John felt a conviction to return to the town that he grew up in and bring the message of Christ to the people that he grew up around in his impoverished community that he was from. So John prayed about it, talked with his family, and after a short time, they decided they were going to do that. And they really, truly, in my opinion, represent this. They're just an example of this better than any that I can think of, because they were living comfortably, okay? They weren't necessarily in the midst of a great storm, but they were comfortable in the boat. They had the house. They had the family. They had the job. But when they heard the Lord's voice calling them to go, they were obedient and they went. John and his family moved back to Mississippi. This was right around 1960. And they just began immediately to teach the children in their community the Bible. They started a church. They started a health clinic. They started after-school programs, all sorts of things. And they were just doing great work there with the people. And this was around the beginning of the Civil Rights Movement as well. So they were very involved in that, and they participated in that. They were registering people to vote. They were housing civil rights workers in their homes. Both very, very dangerous things for them to do in that era, putting their lives and their families' lives on the line, putting themselves in the face of danger in obedience to Christ. And there was an incident that happened after a protest in a nearby town. There was a young man who was arrested and was beaten by these police officers in jail one night. And a short time after that, John got word that there was another young man who was intoxicated in a local restaurant, And the police were on their way to go arrest him. John wanted to protect this boy from having to, you know, suffer that physical torment. And John went and got to the restaurant before the police got there. He picked the kid up and drove home. Unfortunately, the police followed him home, and then they arrested the boy anyway. John was really scared for this young man, so he went to his church, and he got about 20 leaders together from their church, and they pooled their money, and they said, "We're going to go make bond for this kid." They showed up at the jail. They said, "Hey, we got the bond money. You know, let the kid out." And rather than release the kid, they arrested John as well. They brought him into the jail, and they beat him and tortured him all night. John got out, and just a few months later, he was taking part in another protest, and he got arrested again. And the same thing happened again. John was laying on the floor of a jail cell in Brandon, Mississippi, after an entire night of being beaten. And on the floor of that jail cell, he decided he was going to dedicate his life to reconciliation. He was going to dedicate his life to love. He saw the toll that hatred could take, not only on himself, but on the police officers that were abusing him. That they could even get to a point where they could dehumanize someone so much that they could do that to them. And he felt pity for them. John found himself in that moment in the midst of a storm. But John did not cease to continue walking forward. He kept his eyes fixed on the Lord, and he continued to be obedient, and God did some incredible things through his life. John Perkins is still alive. John Perkins is 85 years old, and he has started dozens and dozens of churches, of after-school programs, of low-income housing initiatives, of, you know, home repair ministries. I mean, anything you can basically think of that's a good, positive, uplifting thing for a community, he started like a dozen of those in Mississippi and California. And in 1989, he founded the Christian Community Development Association, which at the time was a collective of only about 37 people that had, that they were dedicated to a vision of seeing gospel transformation in low-income communities. And that organization has now grown to over 6,000 members and 600 churches that are involved in over 100 cities across the country. And in all those places, there are, you know, dozens of these type of amazing ministries and things that are uplifting the community. The fruit from John's life and John's decision to sacrifice his own, as he puts it in his book, Making Neighborhoods Whole, his own self-preservation. He actually said one of the things God saved him from when he came to know him was a concern for self-preservation. God used him to do incredible things. John walked on water. A third grade dropout, the son of a sharecropper, has authored 9 books, has 9 honorary doctorate degrees, has spoken in 200 universities across the country and world. And obviously, I already spoke on all the different programs and things that he has started. So I say that all to you guys just to challenge you and to challenge myself as well. Because I believe that God wants to use us to do incredible things like that also. And I believe that Jesus is right here with us. He's calling out to us. He's asking us to come. He's telling us to have courage, to overcome our fears, to get out of the boat, to walk on water. But we have to be willing to take the risk. We have to be willing to say, "I'm going to do that, even if it doesn't make any sense. Even if that means I could end up on the floor of a jail cell being beaten. Even if that means I could be martyred. Even if that means my parents are going to disapprove of my career choice. Even if that means that people aren't going to understand why I would want to go and hang out with those people when they're a lot different than my people." Right? We have to overcome our fears and to take that step. And when we do, God's going to give us the strength to walk on water. So my question to you is what boat are you in? What boat are you in that's holding you back? The band's going to come up here, and we're going to have a time of communion. And as we do this, which we do every week, we take the bread that represents Jesus' body and the juice that represents his blood. I want us to think about our fears. I want us to kind of offer those fears up to God, right? What are the things that are keeping us from taking these steps of faith? And as we take the bread and the juice that represents his body and his blood, I want us to remember what he did for us. And thank him and praise him for the gift that he gave us, which is his life and death on this earth so that we may have everlasting life. And out of gratitude for that, out of thankfulness for what he has given us, let's offer those fears that we have up to him. Let's give them over to him so that we may be free from those fears and have the ability to take a step of faith, take a risk, step out of the boat, and walk on water. I'm going to pray, and you guys can start playing or whatever you do. Lord, I just thank you for who you are, God. I thank you for bringing us all here this morning. Lord, I thank you for how you're working in each of the lives of everyone that's in here this morning and through this church to make a difference in this world and in this community. And God, I know that many of us are scared. Many of us are afraid of taking a risk, of stepping out onto the water for all of the reasons that you know better than we do. Jesus, we just thank you for who you are, for your life, for the example that you gave us on this earth, Lord, for your death, your willingness to die for us because you love us so much, God. That love that John Perkins felt that he never knew, Lord, I pray that we would all feel that love right now, God. And out of thankfulness and gratitude for the grace that you've given us, which we don't deserve, Lord, we offer these fears up to you as offerings, God. Lord, free us from the things that are holding us back. Give us courage, Lord, to take a step, to take a risk, to do something incredible, Lord. Not for our own glory, but for yours. Amen.